Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will meet with Mr. Jared Bennett, president of Western Kentucky Crop Insurance. As always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey,
morning,
Jay.
Good morning.
Vicki, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I cannot complain. I'm back in the work mode again after being on vacation.
Yeah.
Aruba.
We got to see pictures during the snow and ice of the beach and 73 degrees and
80.
All that
made me feel good when I was trying to get that calf to live at night, you know.
So. Well, you know, I sat there and I thought I really shouldn't do that, but I just can't help myself. And so I wanted to let y'all know the roads were really good in Aruba.
Mm-hmm. We had our typical late January, early February weather of being right in between the snow up north and the rain down south.
Rain. We had to freeze dry. So,
but that's just part of it for that time of the year. We're glad you had a good vacation and glad you made it back with us. And
I'm glad to be back.
Yep. I do want to give everybody a quick reminder, Jay. I know we had a gap training back the first of last week, and you know, we have several in-person trainings going on throughout the state of Kentucky, but there are some folks that for one reason or another may not be able to get to one of these trainings, and I do want to remind folks that you can do that online.
That's right.
There are Amy Rochelle's, who was there with Gap Connections, she did remind folks that they could do that. So if you can't make an in-person meeting, you can do that online for one reason or the other. I got a call this morning before I came to do the podcast about it, that he couldn't make it. And, you know, I said, well, you can do it online if you need to. So quick reminder to those folks about
that. That's right.
And
there's not going to be as many meetings this year either. So just to piggyback on that. Sorry about that, Jay. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're exactly right. We're going to get to that point in the year where we run out of those in-person meetings. And there may be a lot of folks that need to do it online.
Yep.
So gapconnections.com is the website. You can go there. You'll have to sign in with your grower information and all to be able to access that. But that is a way of doing it. Consequently, they started that, you know, during the COVID time a couple of years ago. We've gradually seen these tobacco gap producer meetings get smaller and smaller because of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there will be some folks that don't have that technology. I know in Christian County where we're used to work, where we have a lot of Amish Mennonites, or especially the Amish population that are raising tobacco, they don't have that technology readily available, so they may be able to contact their local extension office. If you don't have good internet or good connectivity options, contact your extension office, and they'll be able to help you walk through that.
Absolutely.
So, David, how are you this morning? Enjoying this little drizzling rain?
Yeah, well, it was a whole lot better than the freezing rain, so we'll take that over that any day. You know, last week was pretty tough on the calving, if you were in the middle of calving like we were, and I had about three calves a day. It was freezing rain. One of them made it really, really good. The other two had to warm up, and one actually lived in the house that night and took her back out that morning at 5, and she's all good now. So
you can't even tell she
you cannot.
Had a
no,
tough
you
start.
No, you cannot. And it probably hadn't been for my wife, she probably would have not made it. But you know how women folk are when they're mothering ability comes out and that kind of stuff. So. But everything went good. So,
well, a lot of folks think about the cold being hard on livestock. Actually, the cold's not that bad once they get up and on their feet.
Yep.
The cold and the wet to combine together is what's so hard on young calves, especially.
Yep. That first couple of hours, getting that first little bit of colostrum is real important.
Right. So, absolutely. Well, glad everybody's here and with us this morning. We're recording this down in Christian County. The local Farm Bureau office there in Hopkinsville is letting us use their facility, and we appreciate them letting us do that, kind of in David and my stomping grounds, because we both live in Christian County.
Right. Didn't have very far to drive this morning.
Made it kind of nice, didn't it?
That's right.
We've got a guest with us today, Mr. Jared Bennett. He's the president of West Kentucky Crop Insurance, located in Pembroke, Kentucky. And good morning, Jared.
Good morning, y'all.
How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're glad to see a little break in the weather. We had a really rough holiday, and things are straightening out and getting a little field work done. I saw some nitrogen getting streamed last couple of days on some wheat.
That's right. It's that time of year.
Yeah. Folks always try to catch that ground froze like we had at the end of last week to get that going. And as long as it's not real muddy, you can run. But right now, I imagine folks are. And a couple of weeks ago, before we had that cold snap, it would have been real difficult to get out and get over wheat. But we're in that time of the year where it's going to have to get done before too long, regardless of the field.
I think we're done for a couple of days.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think so. So, Jared, if you don't care, tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Sure. We're exclusively a crop insurance agency located in southeast Christian County. Service very wide area. Work with growers all over western Kentucky, southern Illinois, Indiana, west Tennessee. Been in business since the mid-80s. Mother started the agency, and we've carried it on and tried to do the best we can, keeping growers well educated on farm programs and insurance. We've got a lot of really good folks we work with. Treat them like family. They treat us like family.
Absolutely. But before you were in that business, you mentioned your mother being in that business. I've got enough gray in my hair. I remember working with her and worked with her for several years when I was with Extension in Christian County. So always thought a lot of her. Glad to have her involved in our programs, because there was a time when nobody was doing this. And
that's right.
She oftentimes was a one-woman show, so to speak, going around and doing these same programs that we all work with.
That's right. The program's really expanded, you know, in the last 20 years. It's just it's grown exponentially. But back in the 90s, there really wasn't much participation. There wasn't much need for agencies because nobody really used the program. So that's all changed. We know that.
Right. Right. Once it became an integral part of the farm bill, it changed for everybody. So,
you mentioned education. That's just a reminder that regardless of the business you're in, education is still the key. You know, we as extension agents, that's what we work in, is education and educate our producers and the people that we work with. But we find out on every guest that we have on this podcast, and we've had a variety of guests and topics, but education is always still an important key of what we all do. And you mentioned that right out of the gate, that, you know, educating your clients. And that's, you know, I think that's a lost art in some things, though. But education is important in everything we do.
I really think our industry probably needs to focus more of their time on education and data maintenance more than sales. I mean, I spend almost none of my time in sales. We simply just sit down and organize and create roadmaps for our guys to follow.
And that's right.
I don't sell anything to anybody. We just maintain stuff for guys. So.
What are things that people have to have to complete their crop insurance, or what are some records that people that are listening here that don't know anything about crop insurance, which I kind of find it hard to believe that nobody knows, you know what I'm saying? But it's so important right now. But what are some things that they have to be able to do those things?
We focus mostly on just keeping good records, maintaining those records for audit. Outside of that, man, we pretty much take care of things for everybody. We try to make sure we've got valid farm boundaries on everything they're farming, and we sit down individually with growers and keep that maintenance of all that data for them. But when it comes down to harvest time, it's pretty important that they do a good job of keeping up with those records. So many of our guys are using precision equipment now.
Sure.
But that precision equipment acts up sometimes, and it's easy to, in the rush of harvest, to just bypass all of that and not worry with it and keep going. But we've got to have a backup plan in place, because again, all of the insurance programs pretty well typically determine claims from a set parameter of farms that you've decided to group together. And if you don't have the ability to provide me a good data set of production, we can't settle a claim properly. So whether that's using good grain cart or farm scales, or most everybody's using precision equipment at this point.
Yeah. I had one of my producers actually on the I don't know what happened to his computer on his combine, but it went out. Yeah. But luckily they had a backup where they were doing all the grain cart weights. Yep. And had it on their iPad, and I mean, you know, and was pretty interesting. I was actually out there visiting the other day, and pretty interesting deal where he had all the stuff on his iPad that his daughter's running the grain cart, and she's inputting all the information right into their for their data. So yeah,
we always encourage some redundancy in all the record keeping, just in case we always have a fail safe in place that way.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I worked with a lot of producers through the years who almost had a triple redundant system. They had those weigh cart measurements, they had their combine measurements, and they had a certified scale at the grain bins that they were unloading at. Yep. And then they would work to match all those up to the weigh tickets when they hauled grain off, and they'd give them an idea about what type of losses they had coming out of the bin versus going into the bin, and that was good at helping them identify the issues that they needed to be working on there at their place. So, you know, kind of at its heart, I guess crop insurance is a way to mitigate risk. Risk mainly, I guess, against production losses. That's really what this is for. But in a lot of instances, risk management has kind of become the name of the game across any of our farming operations.
I think also when we talk about risk management, we don't just talk about the production losses that occur from weather. Obviously, we've also got revenue plans that protect against, you know, massive declines in revenue. But we also have to think about when we are grouping farms together and making those decisions on program elections. Are we grouping the right farms together? Are we making the right decision to group the irrigated and the non-irrigated? Or are we making the right program elections to split double crop and single crop beans? Those are all brand new programs that we didn't have 10 years ago that now a whole lot more decisions are on the table to make every year.
Hearing you say that, I'm assuming you mean keep production class similar from farm to farm so that one farm's not bringing down a number as far as averages wise, or
to an extent, but also when we're setting up liabilities, we have the ability to group all of the irrigated liability into one sort of umbrella policy, and then maybe we have some very high risk farms that need to be isolated by themselves. So again, farmers have the decision to receive a humongous premium savings by putting all of their coverage for a crop in an umbrella policy and having one chance to collect, but they also have the ability, if they want to pay a much higher premium rate, they can break their coverage down to each individual parcel of ground that they farm, so that if that one parcel has a loss on it, it can get paid. So that's not really widespread use per se, because the premium savings are so significant. We see almost everybody enroll in that. But where we do see it is in our big river bottoms, Ohio, Cumberland, you know, the big river bottoms, where we do have, considerably more risk on the table. Those guys, more times than not, will divide that coverage up in individual parcels.
I could almost see definitely in that situation, but maybe even producers who are spread out over a large geographical area, that may be a benefit to them as well. Because certainly, you know, we've got some guys farming over 100-mile distances from farm to farm across western Kentucky, and our weather patterns tend to be a little bit different from place to place. They certainly were last year.
Well, and two, the dirt's a little bit different, and yields are a little bit different. And, you know, I've got a farmer that farms in McLean County and actually has some farm ground in Livingston County. So there's a good bit of difference, and a lot of down on the river bottoms and stuff like that. So that would be a great instance that you would want to break it out like that.
I would think that the cash rents probably vary quite a bit across those distances as well, and that would be another thing you need to weigh out or weigh into it.
Yep. Sure. Yep. So we always spend time working with guys to make sure that we do have those groupings paired up. Obviously, counties give us a break in that coverage, but we also have the ability to combine counties if we want to. For instance, if a guy has one or two farms across a county line everybody sits differently, but we sit right on the county line, and maybe I've got two farms in Todd County that we want to group in with our Christian County farms. Because they're all the same soil types, it's just an imaginary line. It's no different in looking at it. So we would at that point look with the grower and decide if that's an appropriate pairing or not, or if it needs to be segregated out into its own coverage unit. So again, I think what's important is that a grower knows his insurance agent, and his insurance agent knows his farms, then that they sit down I mean, more than once a year, but at least once a year to assess where we're at, our cropping rotations, and where we're planting crops this year. Do we have things set right? I mean, that's a very important meeting that really needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. We've said many times amongst ourselves, but I think we've even said it on the podcast before too, that in the extension world that we live in, we say, you know, we're in the business of building relationships with people, because that's what we have. You know, you build relationships with people, and then it's at that point when they begin to trust you, and then that you're then part of their team. So when they need to make a decision, you know, you're one of the people that they contact, and you certainly are in that same that same position, because, you know, your clients and the people that you work with and your people work with, it's crucial that they build that relationship with those producers, and that they know that producer, they know their farms, they know their operations and what risk they have, and it becomes a point. Sometimes you may know a little bit more of the risk that they're looking at more so than they do in some cases, from your standpoint of what coverage they do need, and building that relationship is really important.
When I think about my friends, you know, who I really call friends in my life, I mean, they're all clients of mine.
Sure.
You know, outside of my job, outside of my work, I really don't have a lot of friends that aren't in the industry.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same.
So we really do become a family.
Yep.
You do.
Do y'all, Jared? Do y'all, when you're talking with your clients about insurance and different things, do you help them kind of decipher all the FSA programs and different things of this nature, just from a standpoint of maybe which way they need to go, you know, as far as which program they need to be involved in with FSA and those kind of things?
We probably spend more time discussing things non-insurance related than insurance. Right. At times I wonder if I should charge some sort of fee for consulting, because those aren't things that I get paid for.
Right.
But yes, we, you know, that again, that's just all part of the whole approach we use to understanding growers' needs, to make sure that we're making suitable recommendations for that. One of those decisions is insurance decisions. One of them is marketing decisions. Mm. And then obviously some the FSA program decisions. Mm-hmm. The FSA programs are not as relative today as they have been, but that's just the cyclical nature of those programs. Everybody sitting here knows that the commodity prices are not at a point where those programs need to provide assistance.
Yep.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
We don't want FSA programs to pay guys.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
No.
So there's lots of improvements that can be made in the FSA programs. I mean, I can think of a list of things. But for us to badmouth the FSA programs and say that they're not worth anything, it's unfair. Mm-hmm. They're just not worth anything today. I can see lots of ways that the program can be improved. Will those be implemented in future farm bills? If we don't tell our elected representatives of the needs that need to be made, then no, they won't be changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had conversations with elected officials before, and their eyes glaze over because they don't understand anything you're telling them.
Yep.
You got to put it in terms that they understand. You talk about polls and elections and those kind of things, they understand those kind of things. And if you talk about program improvements in terms that they can work with, you can finally get somewhere. And lots of times we just talk to a staffer and probably get more down the road with a staffer than with the actual politician. But
I've heard a lot of the politicians even say that, you know, you really need to talk to my staffer because they really understand more about it than I do. And I guess they kind of inform the inform them about what's going on.
Oftentimes, those staffers were hired for that specific purpose. That's what they're supposed to be working on, and they'll have different staffers assigned to different tasks, and that's certainly one of them.
We've all been at those kind of Q&A type things with elected officials, and you know, through different programs that we may be involved with, and you know, we've all seen that time where somebody asked a question, and that member actually looked over at the staffer and said, "Where are we at? Where are we with this?" Yeah. And that tells you there that they're the ones that they're kind of the feet on the ground there, getting that information and funneling it through that person onto the member of Congress. So,
yeah. I think some of the biggest changes that we would like to see or to improve the programs, the FSA program enrollment decisions. This coming March will be between three different programs. Two of the programs are almost identical, but PLC, everybody knows the acronyms. PLC covers price loss for a commodity. The problem is those commodity prices that program uses have not been updated since that program's inception in, I think, 2014.
Yep.
How much inflation have we seen since 2014, guys? Mm-hmm. Those programs are obsolete. Yeah. We don't advise anybody to use those programs hardly anymore. I think there's some commodities that we don't raise in Western Kentucky that are using PLC, but for the most part, those programs are dead programs. So, again, I'd like to see some sort of inflation-adjusted change to that reference price. I think even every 5 years, if they renew that program every 5 years, I still think it's not often enough to update that price. The ARC price is updated annually.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why can't we have some kind of scaling for the PLC program in the same manner?
It certainly would make folks. It would put producers in a situation where they needed to sharpen their pencil a little bit more when it comes to comparing programs, because typically ARC has been the only thing that...
A no-brainer.
Right, yeah. would benefit any producer. But at least if the other was updated on that annual basis, or even, like you say, every 5 years, it would at least be enough so that people would need to still keep making a comparison.
I think the first two or three years of the Farm Bill... it's been so long, guys, but the 2014 Farm Bill, I think everybody enrolled in PLC week because it was a no-brainer. It was going to pay. We knew it was going to pay. And ARC was going to pay. We knew it on corn and beans. But then now that we've seen so much inflation above those numbers, it's not even a decision anymore. Right, everybody knows which programs to enroll in.
At that time, 2012 was still fresh on everybody's mind. But, you know, the reason that things haven't been as relative in the past few years is we've had decent commodity prices.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And some pretty decent yield years for most of those years, too.
That's right. ARC's not really been a player for the last several years because it's been 10 years since we've had any need for any programs like that.
Right.
Well, and then we talk about some other program improvements we need to see. ARC is the other program at FSA. There's two different kinds of ARC. There's ARC based upon the county yield, and there's ARC based upon the individual farm yield. ARC individual kind of works like crop insurance at the farm level, kind of. There's some caveats to it that I won't go into, but both of those programs cover revenue. The ARC county program pays when the county revenue falls below a certain benchmark. So we start the year with a yield and a potential price and set a revenue amount for the county, and then at the end of the year, if that revenue price and yield combination's below that, the grower gets paid. But they don't get paid on the crop they plant that year. They get paid on their base acres for a farm. Their base acres might not be the crops that they're planting anymore. The base acres might not even match the amount of acres that they're planting anymore. These base acres were determined years ago, guys. I don't even know when that was.
Yep. Long time ago. Mm-hmm. And because of the shift in production that we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years, that's why they don't match. Because we're seeing areas in production right now that probably were fenced and under pasture whenever those base acres were established. So,
We all know we're farming way more acres in cropland than we did when these base acres were established. And I simply think that the solution to the problem is not increasing a farm's base acres, but just simply going to a planted acre payment. Mm-hmm. That way you're actually covering the crops that are at risk in the year that the disaster occurs. Because, again, if we have a disaster, we had a corn, I'm going to call it a disaster this year, but we had a pretty good failure on our corn crop this part of the state. And, guys, if you were not heavy on your corn base acres, you're probably not going to get much assistance from that ARC program this year.
Sure. I've heard folks make that same comparison, Jared, of how that would not only be fair to folks in Western Kentucky, but really all across the state, because we've got a lot of farms in the central part of the state that have no base acres that have been being cropped for some time now.
Yep.
And rather than to change those base acres and lock them into something that they may or may not be doing 5 years from now, just allow them to be able to cover what they're producing in that year. The acres that they're producing in that year on that particular crop, and that should be the most even way to do it across the state.
Yeah.
How let me ask you this real quick. You know, you talked about those are obviously some big reforms to the crop insurance program, but are the FSA programs, how likely do you think any of that may or may not be done on a federal level? Because those sound like really good ideas.
I think they're
long
shots.
Yeah.
The PLC is, I think we could get the PLC thing done.
Right.
Talking about the amount of additional funding that would be required to shift off of base acres onto planted acres, that's a pretty big ask, guys.
Yeah.
That'd be a big.
Yeah. It sounds like it sounds like too much common sense to make that work. But, I mean, you know what, it really is. I mean, but I'm kind of like you. I'm not sure that it'll ever get done.
Well, but that's what it boils down to. You said it there, is the amount of money it would take to get that to change would be enormous, because we're just talking about one state, and this would have to cover 50, more or less. So,
I think we also just have to remember that Washington oftentimes hits the easy button. And it's easy to just renew what we've been doing, tweak it a little bit, and call it something new. To completely redesign the program, it's tough.
And in the long run, though, that's what often almost drives the need for a new farm bill every so often, is the fact that it's not really updated. It's just carried into the next year.
Yeah.
But as we move on, and the other problem is, as we move on in our time here, we've got fewer and fewer people that know what agriculture is all about. Mm-hmm. Fewer and fewer people that know exactly what the crop insurance program does. Fewer and fewer people that know what the FSA programs actually do. So, I mean, that's the battle I feel like that we're trying to fight every day, is trying to get folks in Washington to understand what we're doing.
Yeah. We have to remember that we call this the Farm Bill, but it's not the Farm Bill. It's the Food Bill.
Yep.
And we're just lucky to be a part of the Food Bill and get it called the Farm Bill.
Yep. Absolutely. Very small percentage of that. The Farm Bill is actually agriculture related. It's all food nutrition programs.
And I think most people, or a lot of people, don't know that.
Yep. I mean, I think it's like, I hate to throw out a number, but it's 85% or 90% that's actual, I think, is, I mean, the ballpark.
I was thinking in the 80s for sure.
Yeah. That's food nutrition related programs and not necessarily agriculture programs. So, We've got a big hill to climb for sure on this deal, but I think those are some great suggestions. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't work either. So, I mean, you know, but like you said, there are some funding issues there that we've got to deal with and those type things. But, you know, hopefully folks will kind of take to this, and some of those folks in Washington will kind of understand and listen.
And I guess the goal here, guys, is we all know that as we see disasters occur, Congress is always called to react with ad hoc disaster programs. Mm-hmm. And I'm always astonished that the lobbying groups that asked for all these provisions to be put into the Farm Bill don't go, this is what we asked for. These are the reasons we asked for these, is because we wanted a program that was actually going to respond to disasters. And if Congress would make the disaster program that we have standing functional, we wouldn't need to create all of these pork-filled disaster programs thrown together at the last minute.
Yep.
So give us a program that actually works, that actually protects the risk that we have. Give us what we need, and then we don't have to pass billions and billions of last-minute disaster funding. That's we don't need it at that point.
I agree.
David, to address your comment, the nutrition title comprised 76% of mandatory outlays, mostly for supplemental nutrition program.
Yep. Yeah, I knew so, it was.
When you look at the other main titles, you've got farm commodities and conservation. That pretty yeah. And crop insurance. Those are the other yeah, three.
I'd say crop insurance is probably number two.
Yeah, I would say dollar wise, definitely is, yep. And should be. You know, when we talked earlier about how that was the relevant change to get farmers to look more at crop insurance programs. That portion that covers the premium that farmers get out of that is by far to me one of the biggest incentives that they've had in for years to do that. It's I almost feel like outside of some of the individual conservation programs, it's probably the most important part of the farm bill.
Something the industry always really advocates for is Congress to at least hold tight, but we're always asking them to strengthen the private sector delivery of the program. Government programs oftentimes are slow to react to situations. So if we think about ARC and PLC providing disaster assistance, those program funds aren't even delivered until a year after the disaster occurs. And when do we need money the most? We need it when the disaster occurs.
Disaster.
If we've made it a year without our disaster assistance, we're probably mm-hmm. honestly okay. We've weathered the storm, but yep. you know the private delivery is I compete against my peers and agencies compete against each other and companies compete against each other. We're all trying to one up the other. That's private business.
But that's what I was fixing to say. That drives that industry.
Sure.
I think about the recent tornadoes and not to for no means just to sound like I'm belittling government responses on things. I'm not. I'm just making that direct comparison to what you said. We had the tornado outbreaks that went through Hopkins County where I work. And within 2 to 3 days, FEMA started rolling in. They started doing the things that they do, which was great. It was absolutely needed. But individual insurance agents were on the phone with their people at 11 o'clock that night.
Yeah.
6 o'clock that morning, one of the producers that I worked with that lost everything he had told me that they lost cell phones, tires, and all that, so he couldn't, they couldn't communicate, basically. And when he got to town the next morning to buy fuel for a generator and his cell phone started buzzing, the first calls he had was from his insurance agent. They were on the scene so much quicker because they're there.
We have an incentive to perform.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Not that I'm ever disgusted at the performance of the individual local FSA offices. It's the national level that they design these programs the way they do, and it's no fault of any person that we know. It's just those programs don't deliver timely need. Mm-hmm. And the insurance programs are designed specifically to target growers who have the needs, mm-hmm. and then my job is to immediately respond to that. And again, we're all out there in a race trying to see who can be the best.
I know the report that we had to do in Hopkins County that had to be turned into USDA on farm-related losses from that storm were not due until 30 days later.
Sure.
Yeah.
So.
So we always want to make sure that Congress is providing adequate funding to the insurance companies to operate. So something a lot of people probably aren't aware of, a term is called A&O, administrative and operating disbursements. So every insurance premium that you buy for your home, your farm, your auto, your life, has an expense factor built into that premium that you pay as part of your premium. The insurance company knows its expenses to service that policy.
they charge you for that premium. So Congress, in an effort to keep premium expenses low, does not allow the insurance companies to put that expense in the premium. So they're just paying the raw cost of the policy without any of the servicing requirements of it. And in lieu, Congress pays the insurance companies that expense load. So the insurance companies are always arm wrestling with the government on that reimbursement cost. Mm-hmm. Congress always, it's always a battle with Congress. They're always wanting to reduce that expense load. And you and I, everybody knows what has your personal expenses, what have your farm expenses done over the last 2 or 3 years. So we're always begging for more money as an industry because our expenses have gone through the roof.
Yep.
And we continue to ask Congress to be fair with it. Mm-hmm. Give us the funding that we need to continue to innovate, to continue to service.
And I think that's what most farmers want too, is that opportunity to have that crop insurance to be able to do what y'all are doing right now. I mean, I think that's the big opportunity. When you talk to a lot of people about the farm bill, that's one of the things that they'll say, you know, what do you want in the farm bill? I said, well, I want to make sure my crop insurance is still available. Mm-hmm. You know, I can still do that. I think, you know, farmers are not necessarily looking for a handout from FSA or from somebody like that, or from government agencies. I think they're, you know, that opportunity to insure their crop, and then if they do have a failure, then they get paid, and I think is something that's very important to them.
I think so, too. And at the economic subject matter training, like we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, I mean, that was one of the things that Dr. Snell mentioned, is that they wanted to make sure that the funding for the crop insurance was protected first and foremost in the farm bill. And that speaks volumes as to how important it is to our producers out there.
I'll tell you one more thing that's kind of shaken to the surface the last couple of years that I think we really have to work against is the climate crisis groups. They're really getting difficult on wanting to see more and more linkage between insurance participation and conservation practices, climate smart practices. And what's challenging for growers is that not every acre is the same, mm-hmm. and not every acre needs to be to fall under the same category, and not every acre needs a cover crop. There are acres that need cover crops, but not every acre needs a cover crop, and not every acre needs a no-tillage practice. And we can't use a one-size-fits-all prescription and say that you must use these practices to be eligible for these benefits.
That's right.
Yep. I think a lot of the companies, and Jordan Shockley, Dr. Jordan Shockley was talking about this, that when you do business, like if you're going to sell corn to a certain company, sometimes, and now they're starting to do this, he said, is they're starting to say, well, you've got to do XYZ, like you've got to plant cover crops or something like that. You've got to adopt no-till practices.
Give you stipulations to go along with your crop.
To be able to sell your crop with them, and that's all good and fine, but what about the people that are already doing this stuff? You know, we talk about carbon credits, mm-hmm. and we talk about that, the carbon market and that kind of thing. How do the people that, and there's a lot of people that are doing no-till here, you know, in this whole area, and a lot of folks doing cover crops. So, you know, how do those folks get paid for doing things that they've been doing for a lot of years, you know, sequestering carbon for a lot of years, and that's the hard part. I mean, I think that's the issue.
To me, those acres should receive the premium because they were doing it when it was not a dollar figure tied to it.
Yep.
Well, there was, but it was more incentive on their own production qualities than it was coming from a third party somewhere. Yep. So, you know, that brings us to this point of the show. We always like to wrap things up with a timely tip, and this week's tip is to invest time with your insurance agent discussing your enrollment options. Sign-up deadlines are March 15th, just like for the FSA program. So, Jared, talk just a little bit about that. You talked about relationships, but talk just a little bit about what folks need to do as we're coming closer to that deadline.
Sure. It's a time of year that we need to sit down with our growers. Growers sit down with their agents. They're the ones that can probably give the best advice on how to move forward with the FSA programs. I would discourage you from going to the FSA office and asking which program you should roll in. Those ladies and men there are not going to feel comfortable offering you that advice. So you need to consult with the folks at Extension. You need to do your own research, and then you also need to sit down with your insurance agents. They are very competent and able to do that for you. That's part of their job. March 15th is the deadline to enroll in those FSA programs. That's also the deadline to enroll in your crop insurance decisions for this coming year. A lot of important decisions that will need to be made. A lot of changes that have been implemented in the tobacco programs for all the tobacco growers that are really, really important to be discussed. So make sure you take that time this year.
I think it's great advice. I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't know if we could have sat down and did that show without at the very end just saying that, you know, go sit mm-hmm. sit down with those folks and talk about that, because those folks, you know, they know their business. You know, we're in the education business, but to be real honest with you, we don't get specific, if I can spit it out, mm-hmm. as they do with their insurance, and they know those programs inside and out. So we encourage you to go and do that for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, the only thing I would add on to that is not to wait to the last minute to do it. If you've got somebody that you've done business with along the lines and you've got a good relationship with it, now's the time to be thinking about it. We're in February right now, but whenever you may listen to this podcast, don't wait to the last minute to look at that or any of your farm programs.
Absolutely.
Be able to make some of those decisions, because this is all part of your farm management plan yep. for that crop year. Be able to make some of those decisions early on. And really, when we talk about risk management, you're taking some of those worries or issues off of your plate. So,
yep.
And take the time during when you're meeting with your agent at that time to kind of educate yourself about that plan, because I know in insurance we all have insurance on our houses and our farms and our automobiles, but I can only speak for myself, but I can't say that I understand everything in that policy, and mm-hmm. and I'm not going to ever understand what's everything that's in the policy. But it's also good though just to sit down with your agent and just, you know, try to educate yourself on what's in that policy, just so you know.
You know, a guy kindly put it to me years ago like this. I was trying to make decisions on whether to insure an older vehicle or not. He said, well, here's the way I look at it dollar-wise. He said, because you're insuring it either way. Either you're buying the insurance or you're saying you're going to insure it yourself, that you can cover those costs. He yeah. says, if you can't cover those costs out of your own pocket, then you need to be looking at insurance. So. Yep. That kind of sums it up for any industry.
Yeah, you gotta be pretty stout to self-insure.
I don't think I want to.
I'm not that stout.
I don't think I want to.
Well, Jared, we appreciate you being here with you today. I've known you a long time. Like I said, worked with your mom before and knew your dad. Our kids went to the same school, and we've been around each other a lot through the years. So we really appreciate you coming on and being with us today.
Well, it's been fun. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we also want to thank our hosts for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.